From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 148 of Little Brother for the 25th of May, 2024. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal, and I might even be graceful enough to grant it. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. The Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, has issued fines against all three of the first-tier wireless carriers for illegally sharing location data. T-Mobile's fine is $80 million, Verizon's is $47 million, and AT&T is being fined $57 million. Some smaller carriers, known as MVNOs, carriers that rent capacity from the majors, are also caught up in the penalty, with the total of the fines across the board adding up to about $200 million. One of the unfortunate facts of cellular phone service is that, in order to function, the network has to have at least a rough idea of where you are located so that it is able to direct calls to you. As such, location data is readily available for all devices connected to a given network, including analog phone terminals, data modems, even flip phones, and this has been the case as far back as 1G, but the resolution of the data has improved with time and network growth. Speaking of the FCC, last month they reinstated net neutrality. This month they are clarifying the rules. It seems that there was a loophole in the rules as previously written, which loophole would permit pay-for-speed agreements, where faster connections to customers could be provided to websites and services that paid for the privilege. For instance, Yoyodyne Industries could pay Spectrazon Internet or Verimobile Wireless so that customers of those ISPs would get a faster load time from Yoyodyne's servers than from everybody else's. The FCC has clarified that this is not cool. That's a technical term. I have spoken many times about Flock Security. As a reminder, they are a company that makes automatic license plate readers which communicate to a central repository. Government agencies, including law enforcement, can purchase the camera systems or the data that they produce as needed. However, so can private entities. The West Observer is reporting that Simon Properties, Inc., the largest owner of shopping malls in the U.S., have now joined the fray and are purchasing and deploying Flock cameras on all of their properties. However, the reporting further suggests that they are taking the extra step of making their feeds directly available to law enforcement, not just available for purchase from Flock. In contrast to that, TechCrunch is reporting that Microsoft have reaffirmed that they are barring the use of their facial recognition AI product by law enforcement customers. They have updated the language of the end-user license agreement for Azure OpenAI to clearly prohibit integrations by or for police departments. Finally, the U.S. Department of Transportation has finalized a rule that will require automatic emergency braking on all light-duty vehicles by 2029. Under present rules, AEB is already required to be present and functional for all vehicle speeds up to 62 miles per hour. That's 100 kilometers per hour for those who prefer metric. And the new rule will expand that to 90 miles per hour. The braking must kick in to avoid contact with other vehicles and to avoid pedestrians both in daylight and in darkness. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned this time. And just like last time, we're gonna have a lightning round. Ready? Go! The San Francisco Chronicle is reporting that a data breach of healthcare provider Kaiser Permanente may have affected as many as 13.4 million members, and in a big way, names, passwords, social security numbers, credit card numbers, fun stuff. Dell Computer says they've also been breached, 49 million customers affected, names, physical addresses, and information about what hardware you own, including service tags and warranty information. Out-of-Box, an Australian facial recognition firm that primarily offers its services to bars and clubs, has been breached. The breach was in turn used to demonstrate an absurd level of data collection carried out by organizations of this type. A post on X, formerly known as Twitter, suggests that the Post-Millennial, a right-wing news outlet, has been breached, exposing its mailing lists, subscriber database, and details about the site's writers. Another post on X claims that internet proxy provider Zscaler have been breached, and that the breach includes confidential logs, credentials to access multiple types of systems, including email, SSL, OAuth access, etc., including certificates. It's apparently available to buy from threat actor Intel Broker for the price of $20,000. The American Radio Relay League, an organization for ham radio operators, has been breached and ransomed, taking down many of their websites, including the Logbook of the World. It's not clear whether or not data were exfiltrated, but since it was a ransoming, the chances are good. Western Sydney University in Sydney, New South Wales, Australia, says that they have been breached via the university's Microsoft Office 365 environment. 7,500 students are believed to be affected and have been notified. Put your stuff in the cloud, they said. It'll be less expensive, they said. Albany County, New York is investigating a cybersecurity breach ahead of this weekend. Not a lot of information about what is believed to have happened or how big this one is, but the county has approximately 310,000 residents who may have been impacted. In the recent breach at MITRE Corporation, it has been discovered that the attackers were able to get into the company's virtual machine environment and used it to stand up rogue virtual machines from which to operate. This is something that should give anyone using virtual machines at least a little bit of pause. And speaking of MITRE, it is currently believed that there may be around 1,000 vulnerabilities that MITRE and CISA are not aware of, but which Chinese or Russian threat actors are. This is, of course, to be expected since this is essentially an arms race between threat actors and defenders, but it's not a comforting thought. And that is your Who Got Pwned lightning round for this fortnight. You're listening to Little Brother. A few days ago, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill barring the Federal Reserve from issuing digital currency. It was introduced by Tom Emmer, a Republican of Minnesota, with the argument that, quote, a digital dollar could give the federal government the ability to surveil Americans' transactions and choke out politically unpopular activity, end quote. Okay. So, I have no love lost for cryptocurrency. I think on the whole that it wastes a lot of resources and accomplishes nothing, but it also seems to me like surveillance and control is not built into cryptocurrency. Meanwhile, the other form of digital dollar, in the form of account balances in banks, hey, that's already pretty heavily surveilled by corporate and government interests alike. If you've ever tried to move a sum of money to buy a car, or a house, or for a home improvement project, you have witnessed it firsthand. So, in a nutshell, I have no idea what the hell Emmer is talking about. Money is already surveilled, and this bill is purely performative. I've spoken a bit lately about cars collecting data and sending it to various places. Most notably, insurance providers have been buying the data and using information it contains as an excuse to raise your rates. This is not the only possible place that the data can go, but it's the one that has led people to wake up and take notice. Over at Sherwood News, Ronnie Mola has written about their odyssey, pun intended, to get Honda to stop collecting their data. It was ugly. Mala writes about the dark pattern involved. It seems as though there is actually a menu option in the car to opt out of data collection. It generates an error every time. Until, that is, you go and you download an app to your phone, assuming that you have one, and you associate the app with your car. Now, once you associate your app with your car, you don't use the app to opt out. You can't do that. That's not an option. Once you associate the app to the car, you go back to the menu option, and magically it now works. Then you can opt out. Then you can delete the app. And then you get this eternal orange dot on your screen that your car uses to indicate that there's a problem. And then you get alarm fatigue. Fucking lovely. I keep hoping that as time goes on and data collection by car makers starts to actually impact people, there will be enough pushback to get car makers to knock it the fuck off, but I expect to be disappointed. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. Let's start with a quote from a security advisory. It reads, quote, "Due to heightened geopolitical tensions and adversarial cyber activity globally, Rockwell Automation is issuing this notice urging all customers to take immediate action," their emphasis, "to assess whether they have devices facing the public internet, and if so, urgently remove that connectivity for devices not specifically designed for public internet connectivity," end quote. Well, duh. So I have a complaint. The security alerts of the sort that Rockwell sent out are generally of tactical scope. As in, hey guys, we found this problem and you need to fix it right now so that your VFDs don't overspin your motors. Hey guys, we found this bug that a hacker can exploit and ransom your operation. That kind of thing. To give you an example in both the industrial and business sides. Here's the thing though. This was sent out as an alert, but it should be general advice. Alerts cause on-call personnel to get called to fix problems. Sometimes even non-on-call or off-duty personnel get roped in after hours. Ask me how I know. Alerts should be reserved for things that are actually emergent. Things that are in tactical scope. The words immediate action should not be used to explain the fucking obvious. And that brings me to another thing. Rockwell wouldn't have sent this alert out if they didn't believe that they had customers who had put their industrial control systems online on the public internet. I want to know who's the dumbass that thought that was a good idea. PLCs are dumb as a brick. They are designed to do one thing, and they do it really, really well and really, really reliably. Security is not that one thing. Connecting them to an Ethernet LAN and having them communicate using TCP/IP is a concept outside of their initial design that has gradually overtaken proprietary buses such as Profibus and Modbus and Genius, etc. In many cases, the protocol stack is implemented on the Ethernet card itself rather than on the CPU like it would for a general purpose computer. So, in that mindset, the abilities of that TCP/IP stack are pretty limited. A denial of service attack is absurdly easy. These devices should be on a network with traffic that looks like the traffic that you would have seen on one of those older proprietary buses, which is to say, it should be essentially air-gapped from everything else. And I mean everything. So, in a nutshell, I have to criticize Rockwell for putting this notice out in the way that they did, because it's the kind of thing that causes 5-alarm fire drills. And more importantly, I have to criticize whatever dumbass thought it was a good idea to put industrial control systems on the public-facing internet in the first fucking place. I bet they're the same idiots who taunt Happy Funball. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Joe Cadillac, Julie Bernstein, Ed Asriel, Fongaboo, Chris, Saco Panchez, Thriller at Play, and Chris for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you've got questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email, critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 149 will drop on the 15th of June. Stay safe and be well.